Hello everyone, I'm Amanda Balbi, Managing Editor at Consultant360.com. Medication adherence is vital for the prevention or treatment of disease. Non-adherence can lead to poor outcomes, such as hospitalization or emergency room visits. A new commentary addresses the myths and importance of medication adherence. My guest today is the senior author of the paper, Dr. Corinne Voiles, who is a research career scientist at Williams S. Middleton Memorial Veterans Hospital and surgery faculty at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Thank you for speaking with us today, Dr. Voiles.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it.
So to start, what are the myths of medication adherence?
Yeah, so my colleagues and I wrote this paper to discuss four common myths of medication adherence measurements that really pervade the research literature and public and political discussions about adherence. So the first myth that we discuss is that on average, adherence to chronic disease medication is 50%. And we see a variation on this as well, is that only half of patients are adherent to their chronic disease medication. So virtually every publication that I read on adherence, and that can be a journal article or even a technical report, cites this statistic. And my co-authors and I tried to track the origin of the statement. So it is cited in a 2003 World Health Organization report, which a lot of people like ourselves cite. We went back to that report and looked in it, and it cites a 1975 randomized trial by Sackett and colleagues, and that was on male steel workers in Canada who were prescribed blood pressure medications. So the authors were testing an intervention, you know, one of the first randomized trials to do so, to improve adherence to these medications. And after 6 months, they found that only 50% of the participants had achieved the desired outcome, which was defined as taking at least 80% of their medications. So my colleagues and I feel that this one finding is insufficient to establish the norm across time, medications, disease states, and populations. And why do we care about this? Well, one of the problems with labeling adherence as 50% is that people mix up different adherence behaviors and measures in coming to the statistic. So when we think about measuring adherence, different denominators can be used. It can be number of patients, it can be the number of times a pill bottle is opened, it can be the number of pills, the number of days, or the number of prescriptions. Adherence statistics that are based on these different denominators really are not directly comparable, and yet they get combined all the time. A second myth that we discuss is that 80% adherence is an appropriate threshold for distinguishing adequate and inadequate adherence. So when we look in the literature, many researchers create two groups of people from their data. One who achieves at least 80% adherence, however that might be defined, and then the other group that achieves less than 80%, and they call those folks inadequate adherence. So interestingly, my co-authors and I tried to trace the origin of this practice, and we came up with that same Sackett 1975 study that the 50% adherence statistic comes from. So, you know, without a doubt, there are data showing that people who achieve 80% adherence, however you define that, have better clinical outcomes than those who don't. However, the decision to dichotomize the data at 80% seems to be made before analyzing the data and often without effort to look at other cut points. So higher cut points, 90%, 85%, or lower cut points. From a clinical perspective, we can't assume that 80% is the optimal adherence rate to achieve adequate control across diseases and medications, patient populations. So we see with HIV medications, for example, that thresholds for defining adequate adherence are often more than 80%, even as high as 95%. Somewhat curiously, though, people use this cut point to validate different measures of adherence and to inform policy. So, for example, to maximize reimbursement in Medicare Advantage plans, patients must obtain 80% of their medications for blood pressure, cholesterol, and diabetes from the pharmacy over 1 year. And other policies use this threshold as well. So the third adherence measurement myth is that adherence is static. So the statistics involved in our first two myths, again, that 50% of patients take their medications and that 80% adherence is necessary to achieve optimal outcomes, that these are based on the practice of either measuring adherence at only one time point or measuring it repeatedly, but just averaging it across time. And so this practice really doesn't allow us to see potentially interesting patterns across time. So for example, if we say that someone picked up 80% of their pills from the pharmacy over 1 year, well, does that mean that they got 100% of their medications for 9 months, stopped for 2 months, and then did it again for the last month? Did they take 80% of the pills each week during that year? Did the patient alternate taking 60 versus 100% every week? Each of these patterns might have different health consequences for the patient, you know, depending on the disease and the medication. The fourth and final myth that we discuss is that self-report measures of adherence are less useful than what are called objective measures. And these objective measures can include pharmacy refills, electronic caps that can be placed onto pill bottles, and pill counting. So the myth that self-report measures are less useful comes from studies in which researchers compare answers to a self-report measure to data from one of these objective methods. So the problem is that what's being measured by a survey is often very different than what is being measured by the so-called objective measure, and it measures it over a different time period. So a survey typically will ask patients how much of the medication they missed, perhaps over the last week or last 2 weeks, whereas electronic caps measure how many times the patient opened the bottle, and prescription data tell us how many pills the patient had on hand, usually over a period of months, not just a week or two. So opening the pill bottle or filling a prescription doesn't guarantee that patients will take the medication. But because comparisons are made between these different behaviors involved in medication adherence, we would expect the relationship to be weaker than if we compared two measures of the exact same behavior.
In your paper, you discuss how researchers can overcome these barriers. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
So there are several things that researchers and clinicians alike can do to overcome these barriers. Some of the recommendations we have are first that when we're reporting adherence rates, we always need to specify which behavior we're measuring, that is, which denominator we have. We also need to specify the disease and the type of medication. When combining statistics from different sources, we need to pool data really to only measure the same behavior or denominator. So we're urging people not to pool data that are based on pharmacy refills, for example, with data that are from electronic pill caps. Once we do this, we should assess and report relationships between outcomes and varying adherence thresholds, not just 80%. And once we know the best threshold, we need to base policies on that threshold rather than having 80% be the arbitrary cutoff for everything. Another recommendation we have is to assess adherence repeatedly across time, so not just once, and use all of those data points, both in making decisions in the clinic and in analyses for research studies. And then finally, regarding self-report measures, there are best practices for developing and validating self-report measures, and we suggest that people follow these. And finally, only compare self-report measures to objective measures of the same adherence behavior.
What role does patient education play in medication adherence?
Now, patient education is very important for adherence. If a patient doesn't know how much medication to take, how and when to take it, or even why it's important, then it's unlikely that they'll take the medication as prescribed. But education is something that we call a necessary but insufficient condition for adherence. Just because a patient knows what to do and why to do it doesn't mean that he or she necessarily will. There are a lot of barriers to taking medications as prescribed, as any clinician knows. Some of the more common ones that we see are forgetting, running out of medication, and not being able to afford the medication, and even having negative beliefs about the medication, such as it's bad for you to take it for a long period of time or that it might damage some other organ in your body. So it's important for individual practitioners and the healthcare systems in which they work, and then even pharmaceutical companies, to do what they can to make it easier for patients to take their medications as prescribed.
In your opinion, is the direction of healthcare going in the right direction? If not, what needs to happen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. So I think, you know, improving medication adherence is going to be one of the keys to improving health outcomes and reducing healthcare costs. And I just mentioned the fact that there are a number of barriers to medication adherence. So I think one way in which healthcare is going the right direction is by recognizing that suboptimal adherence is common and it's a costly problem. And there are a lot of efforts to try to identify interventions to help patients take their medications as prescribed. There are simple interventions that can be applied across large patient populations, like reducing or eliminating out-of-pocket costs, copayments, optimizing packaging of medications, and even implementing reminder systems. You know, these interventions have moved the needle a little bit, but not quite enough. They address some common barriers to adherence, but they don't address all barriers. So an intervention to reduce the cost of medications, for example, will not help the patient who misses medications for other reasons. We see that there are many reasons for missing medications, and these reasons can occur in combination, and they can change over time. And it can get complicated very quickly. So healthcare really is moving in the right direction by trying to figure out what works and for whom, but I still think a lot more work needs to be done in this area. And once we identify interventions that work, we need to find ways of delivering them across entire patient populations to really move the needle.
As a final thought, what lasting takeaway would you like to leave our audience with today?
So, you know, a lot of energy really is being devoted within research to identify the so-called gold standard measure of adherence. And we think that we should stop looking for the gold standard measure because it really cannot exist. I think researchers need to be clear about what adherence behavior they want to measure, develop an intervention to address that behavior, and then use an appropriate measure to evaluate the intervention. And until we do this, we're probably going to see marginally effective interventions that have little overall impact on patient health and healthcare costs.
Great. Thank you again for speaking with us today, Dr. Royals.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.